Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix for Wednesday, December 16th, 2015. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today on The Dad Show, I'm talking with Johnny Griffiths about his family's Thanksgiving at Walt Disney World just this past month. Welcome to the show, Johnny.
Thank you, Aaron. Glad to be back.
You decided to tackle Walt Disney World over a holiday weekend. You're a braver man than I. How far in advance do you start planning a Thanksgiving vacation?
Well, being a DVC member and I have the 11-month booking window, we have a contract that we bought specifically for the week of Thanksgiving because we go there every Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay.
So usually by mid-December, we have booked this trip at Animal Kingdom Lodge.
All right. So is Animal Kingdom Lodge sort of part of the family Thanksgiving tradition then?
It is. It was when you look at the 1 and 2 bedroom villas, it was by far the most affordable on the points. And when you go to Kidani Village, you have the third bathroom there. So if you're traveling with a larger group, it's by far the most accommodating.
Okay. You imply there was more than just you and your wife and your son.
Not this trip.
Okay.
We kind of keep an open ended in case my sister and her grandson and all of her brood wish to go, or if we have some friends that want to come at the last minute, we can always accommodate them.
Oh, okay.
Because Thanksgiving is a really, really wonderful time to be there. And it was really important to be there this Thanksgiving because this was the last year for the Osborne family spectacle of Dancing Lights.
Right, right. All right. Well, so that kind of leads us into the next kind of background planning piece that I like to ask people about. And that is you start planning this vacation, you know, 11 months in advance. You're still 5 months outside of your ADR window even at that point. What were the sort of must-dos that you built your touring plan around for this trip?
Well, I tried to do this trip much differently. Normally what I do is I make dinner reservations for every night of the week. But we decided at the last minute, you know what, we're not going to do that because we don't like doing Disney on a very regimented schedule. And the more reservations you have, then the more regimented it gets.
Sure.
So we just decided, okay, look, we have this full kitchen. You know, we have all these slow cookers. We have all these great recipes. I wound up canceling half of the dinner reservations.
Okay.
And intentionally and probably in one respect foolishly, only made just a handful of fast pass reservations because I just thought, you know, I'm not in the mood for a rush vacation. And sure. So we decided to leave it very open-ended, and we decided, you know, we're going to enjoy a lot more of what the resorts have to offer and what Disney Springs has to offer and the things that don't involve getting into the teeth of the crowds.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. And, you know the property and you know the parks well enough that as a, you know, veteran Walt Disney World tourer, you know kind of where you can do that. So let's then move on to the trip itself. How do you travel to Walt Disney World usually?
We drive every time. When we live right at 750 miles away, and we can go through Atlanta. It's all interstate until you hit the Florida Turnpike. It's a very easy trip.
All right, great. And so you had I assume straight to Animal Kingdom Lodge. How do you like to, do you have a traditional way to start the trip since you have a traditional place to stay,
well,
and everything?
We really don't, because it's easy if you're going to Disney World 3, 4, 5 times a year like I am. It's really easy for things to get old if you're falling into the same routine. So we very intentionally and by design try to make sure that we are doing different things from start to finish. And sometimes that can be done on a very subtle level. You know, it could be, hey, let's go sit at the bar, you know, before we go down to Boma. Or let's book more dinners at Disney Springs or something like that. So we really intentionally tried not to have a first day kickoff regiment of what we wanted to do. The only thing that we really had in mind was to try to go to the tequila bar at Epcot.
Ah, yes, La Cava, one of my favorite spots in all of Walt Disney World.
And I tell you, it was every time you go, it's just fantastic.
Yeah. So did you make it to La Cava on that arrival day?
We did, and we only had a few minutes to get there. We had a bottleneck problem on I-75 of construction, so this was the latest we ever arrived to Disney. We did not arrive till 5 p.m. or so.
Okay.
So the first day, we were playing catch-up a little bit.
All right. So you arrived a little late, but you made it to La Cava. Anything new or special there, or is it just, you know, a favorite and you wanted to make sure you got it in?
It was just a favorite. It is one of those things that just doesn't seem to get old because the drink menu is very, very deep. So you can go and you can try. And when you're drinking margaritas or tequila, you're not going to sit there and go, okay, well, I'm going to have a blood orange and next I'm going to order an avocado. Or no, you're going to stay with the same one. You're not going to mix those.
Right.
So when you go back, you think, well, I really want to try that other one. You know, so it's one of the few places that it does afford you to go back several times and have a brand new experience every time.
So which one did you try this time?
I cannot give up my blood orange margaritas when I go. They're just too good.
It is really good. I did discover the tamarind last time, the tamarindo.
Oh, that's
quite good. I recommend it. All right. So that was kind of the way you got things rolling. Let's kind of work our way around sort of park by park. It was Thanksgiving, and I think a lot of times when people think about Thanksgiving, they think about the fact that by this time, you know, all the decorations are up at Walt Disney World, and I don't know that there's any park that's more decked out than the Magic Kingdom. So why don't we go ahead and start out there and talk about maybe just some highlights. I mean, you had a nice long trip. You were in and out of the parks. Give me some overall impressions of Magic Kingdom, maybe anything that particularly stood out to you, you know, good or bad.
Magic Kingdom was pretty much, and I mean this in a complimentary way, you know, the same as it was. It was just, the crowds were moving well. The rides, you know, the lines were not terribly long. The two things that really stuck out to me, the light show at Cinderella's Castle.
Oh, yeah, the projection show.
Mind-blowing. I have never... I mean, it to me, it was like being in the Hayden Planetarium and watching something. It was absolutely mind-blowing. And Disney seems to have really paid attention to the fact that, hey, we need more viewing areas. So you see all these new viewing areas for parades and fireworks and things like that around the Center Square and the Magic Kingdom there. And the viewing was much better than it used to be.
That's really good to hear. I got the impression that that was happening this summer when we were there, but it was a little too soon. They hadn't really finished everything in the hub. Like, they'd finished the hub part itself, but they still had the castle additions, the, you know, kind of what's the word I'm looking for? The battlements that they were putting up, you know, the additional towers.
Ramparts and things.
Yeah, ramparts. That's the word I was looking for. And those extra ramparts, they were still putting those up, so there were big boxes around them. And my impression that I've gotten, not just from you, but from other people as well, is that now that those are done, you know, you can see through there really well. When we were there, the boxes were in the way because they were still building them.
Yeah, and I mean, if you go to Disney enough, you just have to get used to new construction. I mean, because they're always expanding or they're always improving. But I tell you what, I really and truly, I didn't quite get it the last few times I was there, and we saw this work going around, and it just didn't make any sense why they were doing it. When you go get in the middle to try to watch a parade or you watch the light show or the fireworks, you really understand somebody was really thinking when they decided to do this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this was definitely part of a much bigger plan, and they pulled it off very well.
The other thing that I noticed about Magic Kingdom was the incredibly efficient and thorough security getting into it.
Ah, yes. Yeah, I mean, this would have been just after, you know, the terrorist activity in France. And so, you know, everybody was sort of on extra alert.
We were at the DVC headquarters at Saratoga Springs, and we were actually purchasing some more points, and we were commenting on the extra security, you know, that we saw on our DVC guide was telling us. He said, yeah, he said, you know, all the airports on very high alert. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, Disney's probably, you know, they probably put a few more bodies in blue uniforms and that's about it. Disney apparently takes security a lot more seriously than I thought, because while we were waiting on the ferry boat to leave, we noticed that boarding was taking a long time. You know, the arriving passengers had gotten off and they weren't opening the gates for a while. And I kept thinking, what's wrong? And when we looked up, we realized there was a, what I'm assuming was a deputy sheriff, making the rounds over the boat with a dog. And he made two complete sweeps of the ferry boat.
Wow.
Before any of the passengers got on. And I began to understand, okay, they're really serious about the security right now.
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely had, you know, tightened it up. Anything in particular about any of the specific attractions or shows or decoration or, you know, anything in the park itself?
The Magic Kingdom, what really stood out, and I may have noticed other things, but the light show at the castle was so mind-bending that it's hard to even think about anything else that you saw, because I did not know that could be done.
Right.
It was like, it was partly like being at a drive-in movie. And like I said, partly at being at the Hayden Planetarium.
Yeah. The transformations that they do to the elements of the castle, you know, via projection it's just stunning.
And none of the light, it's like everything is fit into this perfect margin of the castle.
Right.
None of the effects spill over to surrounding buildings or seem incomplete or seem like they're projected too wide and, you know, you may not see this. It's like every single second of that show was perfectly adjusted to fit perfectly within the silhouette of that castle.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that was kind of Magic Kingdom. Now, you did mention that you spent more time than usual in the resorts, and that was part of your plan. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about anything that you experienced, you know, liked, disliked, whatever the highlights were of any touring you did along the monorail resorts there.
On the monorail resorts, the thing that really stuck out of my mind is we did get to go tour the new villas at the Polynesian.
Oh, the bungalows down by the
we saw the bungalows, and they were very, very nice. We also saw the studios. And the bathrooms that they have done, and you can say this about the Grand Floridian, but in this case, you know, the Polynesians where we walked through, it was just gorgeous. As soon as we left, I booked two nights of our June vacation at the Polynesian just to stay in that studio.
And means it really had to impress you, because that was a big chunk of points, especially for a summer trip.
It really was. It was just, I had been a little skeptical of the studios at the Polynesian because of the points. Because if you look at the point chart, it's the exact same point as system as the Grand Floridian on the studios.
Mm-hmm.
And but once I got a look at them, I thought, holy smokes! I mean, this was just it was just gorgeous, Aaron.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so now I think it's 2-1 now, right? Because you stayed in them, Paul stayed in them, and we had one other Dizdad who stayed in one of them. It might have been Ryan, and he might not have been in one of the DVC rooms. He might have been in one of the regular Polynesian rooms, so maybe that was why he wasn't as impressed. But both you and Paul have been singing the praises.
Well, you know, the one thing that really struck a chord in me is – As a builder and as a property maintenance company owner, I'm always paying very careful attention to what they're doing in their rooms, because I know when you're dealing with a resort, you're taking, in most cases, medium to small spaces and trying to maximize them. And the one thing that I really was impressed with was the showers, the walk-in showers of the Polynesian. They're not large, but they're very, very well done. And you don't care that they're not large when you're looking at them.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. I mean, that I think is the one thing that has been consistently said, not just about the studios, but about the bungalows as well, that, you know, there's just been really great attention paid to the maximizing the use of every single space.
The Polynesian, I believe, is the first one that institutionalized the under the bed storage.
Yeah. Now, from what I understand, it's starting to appear in some other places as well. But that was definitely the one. Well, you know, I think they get all of this design kind of idea from the cruise line. You know, that was one of the big innovations on the Dream and the Fantasy, was that they introduced these floating bed frames so that you could slide your luggage underneath the bed.
Yeah, it makes a big difference, because we were in a one bedroom at Animal Kingdom. And, you know, it's as spacious as can be, but you still, your luggage is out everywhere. Your personal effects are out everywhere. And I'm always kind of chafing a little bit of, you know, this room looked so nice when we first got here, and now it looks like a dorm room.
And then we had to move in.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you have places to take, you know, your suitcases, your extra shoes or whatever, just go stick them out of sight and your room stays nice and pretty. That means a lot to me.
Sure it does. Yeah, it makes a big difference, especially in a week-long stay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's take that monorail over to Epcot. And you mentioned a little bit about La Cava. Anything else about Epcot, things that were going on there, things you experienced there that stood out on this particular trip?
Epcot, oddly, you know, when you consider the changes going on at Hollywood Studios and the changes going on in Animal Kingdom – and the changes going on at Disney Springs, Epcot looks oddly frozen in time almost, but you don't really mind it. It seemed pretty much the same as when we were there last time. But the one thing we were doing differently was we had kind of a theory to prove about, okay, is the dining plan really worth it when we're here for a week? Because we had kind of come to the conclusion, you know, when we get the dining plan, we're just eating too much food.
Right. And you had talked already about the fact that you wanted a little more spontaneity and you were making fewer ADRs. And so it's, I guess that calculus all kind of played in together.
So we decided, okay, you know, one of the first things we can do here is we need to start looking at the quick serves a little harder. And when we did, we started really finding some little gems. We found one major disappointment, though. The quick serve at the Moroccan Pavilion stopped serving the lamb wraps.
Oh, really? They weren't doing lamb shawarma.
It was almost like a lamb gyro,
right,
that they used to have that we were just always excited to go eat. Was not there. It was just really heartbreaking to see.
Huh.
But I did notice that Spice Road Table seems to have taken off a lot better, because it was, you normally could go in there and shoot a cannonball and not hit a customer. But right. Now every table I saw was booked every time we walked by there.
Yeah. You know, I'm curious, because I almost have to wonder if that's a Thanksgiving effect. If it does, I'll be pleased and impressed. But man, if it did, that it had to be at least the third reboot before they were able to attract a clientele. Because I know that they've changed that menu at least twice trying to fix the issues with it.
And that, I think you're right. And I think that they're on to something, because when I didn't spend a lot of time looking at it, but when I glanced over it, it reminded me of the menus you would see at a tapas bar.
Which was the original concept.
But everything just seemed more appealing.
Okay.
And it seemed like, okay, this seems a little more appealing. And matter of fact, I decided to, on our next trip, which is coming up in March, I decided to cancel the reservations at Ohana. And we're going to go to a Spice Rope Table the first night. Because wow. it did look really appealing.
Okay, well, it must have looked really good if it got you to trade in an Ohana reservation for it.
Ohana is, I hate to say this, and I hate to sound negative, and I hate to sound so spoiled, but Ohana was just not good the last couple of times we've been. It's, I don't know if we've just kind of worn it out, but it just did not seem like the same restaurant the last couple of times we've been.
Oh, that's unfortunate to hear. I guess I have to consider myself one of the lucky ones, because we've had two or three really good ones in a row there.
Well, they have gotten rid of the pork at Ohana, and they brought back the chicken, which my wife got really excited about, but it was all dark meat. You're not going to get her to go, to a premium restaurant and eat dark meat chicken.
Yeah, I mean,
so she was a little bummed.
There's a method to the madness there. I mean, the problem is that when you're doing, skewer roasting like they are, white meat chicken just does not hold up. It dries out.
Yeah.
And so I think that this is, they keep kind of cycling through, right? They've gone through, they've done chicken. I think they did turkey for a little while. They went to the pork. They're bringing chicken back, but in a little different form. I don't know. My guess is that Ohana will continue to whatever that other meat is going to continue to change. Because my guess is that it's just driven by market pricing.
I'm sure it is,
and pork pricing pork has gone up and, turkey has gone up. And so they've, cycled back around to chicken. All right. Well, but that is interesting to hear, and I'm glad to hear that it sounds like Spice Road is getting, back on the right track.
It just from the occupancy alone, it just looked like it's really just kind of found its stride.
Good. Anything else about Epcot stand out? Either
not so much
or
about Epcot. Not so much about Epcot, but we made the tour. My favorite area of Disney is that whole Beach Club boardwalk back of Epcot area. And we walked over to the model house for DVC at Boardwalk, which is the most accessible DVC model you'll ever see. And they have remodeled the DVC rooms at Boardwalk. And one of the things I was really glad to see, because I thought it only existed at the Grand Floridian, was in the studios, instead of the chest of drawers, that's actually a Murphy bed hidden on the inside.
Oh, they did that at the Boardwalk
they
as well.
Did that at Boardwalk as well.
Interesting.
And so now you don't have to go to the Grand Floridian to go get that. And my son was so relieved, because he's really grown tired of the fold-out sofas. So he's been begging me, when we go make studio reservations, please, where I can go get this bed.
Right, right.
And from what we were told at the DVC, they believe that they'll be incorporating it more as really more fire code safety laws allow, because of not chewing up too much walk-around space.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I mean, the only downside to them, because I think they're great, and I know – clients love them, because especially for folks who have either families of five or there are two kids, and especially when they're kind of tweens and teens of opposite genders, having that separate sleeping space is really great. My only complaint about the banquet beds, replacing sleeper chairs or sleeper sofas, is that they can be a little small for bigger kids.
And that's true. I think if you have a 16, 17-year-old, they're not going to be digging it like my 10-year-old does.
Exactly.
And yeah. I think Disney knows that too, because as soon as you pull one out, the first thing you see on the inside is artwork that appeals to a, you know, a 9, 10, 11-year-old child.
Right. True. Yeah. Okay. So, talked a little bit about Epcot, a little bit about Boardwalk and the area there. Now, did you get a chance to do some sort of decor touring of the Epcot area resorts? I know that last time I was there over the holidays, I was really impressed in particular with the lobby at the Beach Club.
Yeah, they had the Gingerbread Carousel was back, which is a must do every year for us just to go see. Because when you walk in, you're greeted – normally when you walk into the Beach Club, you're greeted by – I guess it would be a potpourri smell. When you walk in this time, you're hit with that gingerbread smell, and you know it's Christmas time at Disney because the gingerbread carousel is going. But I did not notice a lot of difference in the decor in the lobby other than the Christmas decorations. But the thing about that's really nice about Beach Club is they kind of go understated during the holidays, versus – even, you know, Animal Kingdom or the Grand Floridian or anywhere, it's a very, very subtle Christmas decoration. And that they continue to do that with the exception of their big carousel there.
Right. Well, yeah. And then the overwhelming smell of gingerbread.
Of gingerbread when you walk in.
Okay. So Epcot area. Let's go ahead and hop a boat over to Hollywood Studios. And, you know, Hollywood Studios to me has become such a challenge because it's got some stuff there that's absolute must do for us, but then lots of closures as they, you know, begin this construction project that's going to be going on for several years, clearly. So what did you think of your experience at Hollywood Studios? Because I think some of the, at least, sort of temporary or transitionary experiences were just opening during this Thanksgiving week that you were there.
It was all about, and you could tell that everyone was there was in the same frame of mind. It was all about the Osborne spectacle of Dancing Lights. Everybody was geared toward that. The Star Tours ride did have scenes cut in from the new movie and new characters, and that was really interesting to see. But everything at Hollywood Studios was all hinged on those lights. And the traffic was heavy enough when you walk in. You walk in, you go to the left of the park, you walk down by Star Tours. And normally, with the Avenue Streets of Americas, you could go see the lights on either end. You could walk in either end. Right. But they were directing traffic all the way down to the far end. And everybody had to kind of walk through the same way because there were so many people there to see them.
Oh, yeah. So they you know, that's a similar crowd flow to the way they handle it for after-hours parties. When they bring people in for the after-hours parties for Osborne Lights, they do that same kind of loop around and bring everybody in the one direction. And I can see where that would make sense to do that when you've got crowds that are just, you know, bigger than you can deal with if you have them coming from both ends, because it's not so much the problem of them entering from both sides, it's what happens when they meet in the middle.
It reminded me, and you don't see this a lot with Disney crowds because normally it's a very wide crowd, but we were in such a narrow space. It reminded me of leaving a college football game.
Oh my. Almost like leaving Fantasmic.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a relatively narrow space. They handled it very well. Even with the wheelchairs and scooters and things like that going through. But everybody got to see it. And once you got in there, you were not rushed. They were just kind of crowd control to that entrance point. Right, once you got in there, there you could take your time. You could linger. You could do whatever you wanted to.
Yeah,
but then you had one exit.
So. Right. I was going to say it's just that they wanted to kind of, you know, reinforce the mindset of, you know, there's a flow of traffic here that you need to follow, and whatever pace you follow it at is fine, but you want to follow along this direction.
But it was really kind of impressive, just the amount of manpower that they had to put on the ground just to get this crowd directed.
Oh yeah.
Because I know that when we walked from Star Tours to into the Osborne Spectacle Lights, I probably passed 20 cast members directing traffic. And that was the only function they had at that time.
Right, right. Interesting. Now, you know, that was obviously the thing that, that you were there to see, that a lot of people were there to see. And first of all, I have to ask, you know, did it live up to its legacy for a finale show?
And there was absolutely nothing different about it that I saw. And, okay. and that's what, exactly what I was hoping. I was hoping it was going to be a series finale the way that Mr. Rogers did. He didn't have, he didn't do a special episode. He just, it's like in your mind, it just lives on in the same continuity. And so they were not trying to blow, you know, blow the doors off.
Right.
They were just trying to do it as well as they always did. The one different thing that we noticed was, and my wife was very excited to find it, is they were selling T-shirts to commemorate the fact that it was the last year.
Okay. Interesting.
And they were a hot item there too. Let me tell
I bet. You. All right. Well, you know, did you get a chance to try anything else in Hollywood Studios? Any, well, you did mention, the new scenes in Star Tours, but, any other attractions or restaurants or anything that you tried at Hollywood Studios that Bear mentioned?
No, we didn't. We really just kept it very simple. We, every night we would go back to watch the lights and, we went to Star Tours, I think only two times. And this was, it was almost like we were on a sightseeing trip this time. Instead of, okay, I want to do this ride or I want to do this ride. It was, I really want to go see this or I really want to go, you know, shop at this place. Or so it, we were trying purposely to have a different vacation. So there was very little we did at Hollywood Studios beyond the lights.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, you know, that fits that approach. Well, the only park we haven't talked about yet is Animal Kingdom, and you were at Animal Kingdom Lodge. So did you get enough Animal Kingdom feel from the lodge, or did you spend some time in the park as well?
We went to the park, and Yak and Yeti has become, even though we were trying not to have a regimented vacation, Yak and Yeti is always one that we, even if we don't have a reservation, we're going to try to get one there and eat. So we ate some more of the quick serves there, and they were good, but the lack of seating, or it may have just been the amount of crowd versus the available seating,
right,
didn't really make it a really comfortable experience to do. But we saw for the first time, and I don't know how in the world we have missed doing this, but we walked up closer to the Tree of Life and walked around the base of it and really got a good look at all the animals carved on it. And I sat there and I wondered, I've been here over two dozen times. How did we not do this before? So it's really surprising how you can go find this little nook somewhere that you, you know, has always been there, but you never paid attention to.
Well, that's, I think, one of the great things about being a repeat Disney visitor, right, is that those kinds of things exist in all of the parks.
They do.
You know, and Animal Kingdom Lodge, I think, does a particularly – or Animal Kingdom Lodge, Animal Kingdom theme park does a particularly good job of incorporating those, you know, really kind of next-level themed richness components. And the Tree of Life is a good example of that. And it seems to me too that, you know, because they've been doing all this work getting ready for, you know, Rivers of Light and Avatar Land, that, you know, the Tree of Life has finally gotten some much overdue TLC.
And the more that I walked around Animal Kingdom, and it really started at Animal Kingdom, and looking at the topiaries, the holiday topiaries around Epcot, and as we walk through these little jungle paths, especially the Maharaja Jungle Trek, when you start going through, you know, the bird sanctuary and just the really almost isolated places that you don't even you really feel like you're off in, you know, in the woods somewhere and not in a theme park.
Yeah,
it really, really made me wish that Disney would open a botanical gardens there.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting concept. You know, there are, I can already imagine places that something like that could go, either, you know, around property or within a park, or, you know, as an offshoot with next door resort or something.
Just when you start looking at the little isolated places that are just kind of these little, you know, almost all like private gardens, you begin to understand the talent that they really have in their landscaping architecture department.
Oh, yeah. I got to see Flower and Garden for the first time. I guess it's now a couple years ago, but was really blown away by the work they do with Flower and Garden. And that's all that is the stuff that they do every place else, just kind of concentrated.
Just walking around for the first time, we took, I know I'm getting off topic here a little bit, but for the first time we walked the path from the Ticket and Transportation Center to the Polynesian.
Just I love that path.
The little path. And I was just blown away with just the attention to detail, the torches, the planting, everything about it.
Yeah, I love that because, you know, it's a little thing, but, you know, you just were talking about how along this path there are the torches and the plantings. What there isn't are, like, you know, garish yellow signs that point to, you know, Ticket and Transportation Center that say Ticket and Transportation Center this way and Polynesian that way. It's all integrated. It's all themed. And as a result, this little out of the way path is incredibly easy to navigate, and it all feels of a piece with its environment.
And what I really was struck by is when you get off in these little sections like this, you want to sit down for an hour or two and just take it all in, because you feel like you just found like your little private corner of Disney.
Yeah. I love those little nooks and crannies. We've done a few shows on, you know, your favorite off the beaten path kinds of locations. And, you know, every time we do a show like that, I turn back around and, you know, there are another half dozen places that, on the one hand, I think are really cool and think everybody should know about. And on the other hand, I'm afraid to share because then somebody else might take my spot. All right. Well, you mentioned also Disney Springs, which is really kind of in transition. It had officially become Disney Springs. You know, the signs had gone up and everything by the time that you were there. So did you get to spend some time down there at Disney Springs?
There were a couple of nights that we went, and it's still very much a work in progress, but you can just really start to see it come together. I walked around the outside of Morimoto, the new Japanese place.
Yeah.
And it is just stunning to look at, even from the outside. So if they keep that same, you know, impressive architecture going, Disney Springs is going to wind up being something incredibly special, even more so than what it may be now.
Yeah, that's actually a good point because, you know, we've talked a lot lately about all the new restaurants that are coming down there and how excited we are to try all this food and all that. But, you know, I'm really glad you mentioned that about the architecture, because it has struck me that much more so than Downtown Disney, the architecture is just being done much more intentionally everywhere, right?
It
all carries a feel and a message, and it's Imagineering the way they do in the parks, but they're doing it in Downtown Disney.
It's flowing. I can see the beginnings of it flowing much better than it did.
Yeah.
And when you it's still pretty disjointed because it's also pretty much a work in progress. But if you just stop and you look around at all the things they've done and how they kind of blend into their environment, you begin to get little glimpses of what the bigger picture is going to be. And it's really exciting to look at.
Yeah. Yeah. I have reservations at Morimoto's already set, one for the Diz Dads convention weekend in January. And then I decided after dithering about it for a long time to go ahead and make another reservation for it in February when we go back for our family trip. So I should have a rather thorough review of Morimoto's soon.
I think if the outside's any indication, you should be thoroughly pleased.
Yeah. All right. Well, so we've kind of covered most of property. Is there anything else about this particular vacation that stood out to you, that it's the kind of thing that several years from now, when you think back about this vacation, what are the things going to be that kind of are the memories from this one?
We had what turned out to what started out as a very odd and unfortunate incident. And it really kind of underscored, it wound up underscoring the professionalism and courtesy of the Disney people that you meet down there. My son suffers from crippling migraines. And when this when it hits him, he has just absolutely crippling dizziness that goes along with him.
Sure.
And this lasts for a week. And it, for the first time ever, it has hit him on vacation. And we were halfway through the vacation, and he couldn't even get out of bed.
Oh, how miserable.
So we spent a lot more time at the resorts for a couple of days than we had intended to, just trying to get him nursed back to health. So we had Thanksgiving Day dinner reservations at the Crystal Palace. So I'm thinking, well, you know, you can't miss Thanksgiving dinner. You know, there's really no substitute for it. So let me just try to walk you through the park. And it just was not working. He just could not get through the dizziness. Every light had a tracer. Every sound was really getting to him. So a Disney employee noticed what was going on and recommended that we get him a wheelchair. And at first I'm thinking, oh, no, we're not going that route. You know, he's not handicapped. He's not, you know, he's able-bodied. But as I saw how he was really suffering, I decided, okay, well, maybe we need to.
Sure.
And my wife went back to the front of Magic Kingdom to explain what was going on. They immediately gave her one. No questions. I said, absolutely, just take it. And as we went from park to park, I've had relatives that I have taken in a wheelchair with adults. And when you leave the park with them, the procedure is you're supposed to turn that wheelchair in.
Right, right.
And get another one. But as we were leaving and they could see basically how miserable my son was at the point, they were very understanding, especially at Epcot when we went up to the monorail. They said, just take it. Just go wherever you need to with it. Don't get bogged down in trying to fight it. So, you know, they really helped make what could have been a really, really bad situation a lot better. And that's actually one of the things that we're going to remember.
Oh, sure.
Because it was their kindness and their consideration that saved the last 3 days of that trip.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. We had a trip a few years ago where we're in a restaurant, we're enjoying dinner, and a server was clearing tables and was clearly in the weeds and doing everything that she could to clear as fast as she could. And it was, frankly, pretty impressive. But as she walked by, my son had left something kind of sticking out a little bit underneath his chair, like a, you know, bag or something. And she stumbled just a teeny bit. And when she did, she dumped all these plates that were stacked up on her bus tray, like on my daughter's back. Now, nobody got hurt. It was scary momentarily, but nobody got hurt. It was our fault in a lot of ways, you know, because there's no way she could have seen. I mean, she had this huge stack of plates and his thing was sticking out. But the way they reacted was so warm and so positive and so much about, you know, not how can we make the problem go away, but how can we help you? You know, not how can we make it so that you don't want to complain? It was just, how can we help make this not be a bad experience for you?
Yeah, they didn't try to handle you.
Exactly. And, you know, as a result, we still love the restaurant and we go back. You know, it's part of our Cape May Cafe stories and, you know, it certainly hasn't kept us away. We love it. And that kind of service made what would have been a terrible or could have been a terrible experience into one that we remember sort of warmly.
And Disney really personifies this. It's never the fact that there is a problem. That's going to happen wherever you go. It's how it is handled once it has occurred.
Yeah.
And they seem to have a really good standard procedure of how to do it.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, I guess what I would do to kind of wrap up here is to ask two things. Well, first of all, is there anything about this trip that I haven't asked you about that you've been dying to tell us?
I'm hesitant to tell you because just like you are with your grottos and private spots, you really don't want to put an X on the map. But if you get a chance and you go to Disney and you just need that quiet time, especially adults, and you want to go sit down, you want to have a beer, you want to have a drink, you want to watch the game, or you want to listen to a lounge singer, go to Martha's Vineyard Bar at the Beach Club. It is my favorite, actually my favorite bar to go to.
Wow.
Have the best bartender. I don't mean to sound like a lush here, but you know they have the best bartenders. It's quiet, but it's not, you know, it's not like a doctor's waiting room puts you to sleep.
Right.
It's always very comfortable, and you're still just a step away from all the activity. But it's like you just kind of went into your own little quiet cone there for a few minutes, and it's just wonderful. And if you have an hour to kill on an afternoon, just walk over there to it, and sit down. You will not regret it.
Excellent. Well, you know, we've got a boardwalk bar crawl scheduled for Diz Dad's convention weekend, and we haven't set the agenda yet, so Martha's Vineyard definitely makes the list.
Good.
All right, and then, you know, the way I always like to kind of wrap these up, if somebody else is considering a Thanksgiving week trip, which is sort of its own unique animal, what one or two bits of advice would you give somebody who's preparing to do that kind of a trip to make sure that, you know, they get the most out of it possible?
Well, there's a couple of things to remember. And the first piece of advice I have is I need to know what kind of trip are you wanting? Do you know specifically what you want to do like we did? We knew what we wanted to go see, what we wanted to go experience. So we weren't worried about fast passes. We weren't worried about a lot of dinner reservations because there were things we wanted to do beyond that. But if you're still kind of soaking in the whole Disney experience, then you need to set the calendar on your iPhone to tell you right at the 6-month mark to start making dinner reservations so you get the ones you want. And you're going to have to do some pre-planning. And then I think it's 90 days, start making your fast passes.
60 days.
And even if you don't want that regimented of a vacation, go ahead and make them because it's a lot better to have them and have the option of canceling them than thinking, oh, I really wish, you know, we had made reservations at the Brown Derby.
Yeah.
And not be able to get in. Then remember, too, when you're there on Thanksgiving, you're going to have a surge in the latter part of the week. And so, you know, if you're there earlier in the week, like checking in the Saturday before, that may be the time you want to go do the theme parks and then back off. And then maybe, you know, when we had some warm weather, we were, you know, sitting around the hot tub in the pool at Animal Kingdom when we knew that the surge of crowds were there that Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Sure. That's a good point. You know, get your park stuff in early so that when the surge comes in, you can be enjoying the resorts instead of being so wowed by the resorts when you first get there that you've saved up the parks and you're waiting for the crowd to get there.
Exactly. And the extra magic hours are nice, but just don't – it was a hard lesson for me to learn. You don't have to be a theme park commando to do whatever you want. You can basically, especially with the new FastPass system, you can go to your theme parks practically by appointment, go do the two or three things you want, and then go – it's a 45,000-acre resort. I mean, there's plenty of things for you to do.
Right.
If you don't want to be in those crowds all the time.
Yeah. And I wanted to add, because I started to mention this before, you know, you were talking about going ahead and making those reservations. You can always cancel them. I would say similarly with FastPass reservations that, you know, I think a lot of people got freaked out when we switched to this FastPass Plus system, feeling like it was sort of oppressive to have to make these reservations in advance. It was difficult for them to, you know, have that kind of time frame schedule set for them on their vacation in advance, all this stuff. And the one thing that I've been telling people consistently is, look, just because you made the FastPass Plus reservation doesn't mean you got to use it.
Exactly. There's no penalty for a no-show.
Yeah, it's a fallback. It's what you do because if you do that, you know you've got expedited access. But if there's something else you'd rather do and it takes you longer, so you do something else because that's what you prioritized it. You decided you wanted that more.
You're always going to have those 1 or 2 days when you're at Disney that you went to the park where everybody else decided to go to that day. And having a fast pass, it may not be exactly what you're there for, but it's really nice to have to walk in behind the red velvet rope on a fast pass on those days that the park is really bottlenecked for, you know, unexplained reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, you know, Johnny, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about your Thanksgiving trip. It's a nice contrast. We've gotten lots of different kinds of stories, and it's interesting to me because this is now going to be the second in a row where somebody who's been to the parks a number of times and is just kind of getting the idea that we can do this differently, we can slow things down a little bit, we can take it a little, you know, more laid back and still have what feels like to us a real Disney vacation that you know, we can enjoy and remember as a Disney experience without having to be commandos.
And there are plenty of places you can stay there. I'm fully convinced there are places you can stay down there, never step foot in a theme park, and still have a wonderful vacation.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, anyway, thanks again for coming on and talking to us about it.
My pleasure.
Look forward to hearing again from the next one.
Thanks a lot, Aaron.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. Never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment. And there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.